I'm Richard Dugan, and I thank you very much for joining us. Our program today, Tell Me Your Story, takes us on a rather interesting journey. We're going to be taking a look at how you can change your life and your world. What would it mean to you to discover that we are able to have the power to reverse disease or redefine aging? Well, we're going to talk with the author of the book Spontaneous Healing of Beliefs, Greg Braden. Stay tuned. I hope that we reach a level of understanding on how we can accomplish these things, Greg Braden, because this seems like a monumental task, Herculean at the very least, but yet it isn't going to take brawn or muscle to do it. It's going to take the power of the mind and thought, if I am correct. Greg, welcome to the program. It's good to have you back.
Good afternoon, Richard. It is a joy to hear your voice, and I'm absolutely thrilled to be on your program talking about this brand new book, The Spontaneous Healing of Belief, Shattering the Paradigm of False Limits.
And, of course, we're here bringing new paradigms for a new world and working to create things that maybe we didn't even know existed or that we could change.
Well, Richard, before we even get into this program, I know from our past experience that our time together goes by very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to take just a moment now. I want to thank you in advance for your vision, for the work that you do, for the programming that you bring to your community. And I want to let all of our listeners know how really blessed and very fortunate you are to have programming like this in the community that builds around it. In the last 5 years, we have been on every continent of the earth except Greenland and Antarctica. We haven't made it there yet. And people all over the world would love to have and are a bit envious, in fact, of some of the communities and the kinds of programming that we are developing here in the States around new thought, new paradigms. And they know they can pick it up on the Internet, and it helps, but you've all got it right in your backyard here. So I want to say that right up front before we even begin.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that, and it is a joy for me to be able to do it. I have been thinking about it and wanting to really go in this direction, and the opportunities just opened up, and, well, here we are. And here we are talking about the spontaneous healing of belief. Again, the subtitle, Shattering the Paradigms of False Limits, as I would term them, perceived limitations. Now, my first question to you, and then I'm going to let you just carry this in the direction that you will, has to do with the title, because the title implies that beliefs, as we're going to be talking about them today, are along the lines of a disease, a virus, an illness that we need to be healed of or from. So let's start from that last word, belief, and define it in the context of our conversation today.
Sure. Richard, one of the things that we found is in Western societies, when you use the term belief, for about as many people as hear the name, that is how many different ideas we have about what belief is in our lives. And in Western societies, it's been almost relegated to a benign experience, a kind of a nebulous experience that really has very little meaning, has very little power, very little effect in our world. And I'm going to say right up front, nothing could be further from the truth. When we leave our Western conditioning, when we go into the ancient and the indigenous traditions, we go into the texts that have recorded the power of human belief and how to use it in our lives in very healing and constructive ways, what we find is that belief is considered to be the single most powerful force that humans have in the universe, literally the force that allows us to interrupt the flow of space and time and rearrange the atoms of our physical world through a language that we are born into this world already knowing how to use until we're conditioned out of it. So I know that's a huge statement, and it covers a lot of ground, but this is the power of belief. When I began, I'll just back up a little bit. A year ago, you and I were doing an interview on a book called The Divine Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was writing The Divine Matrix, the subtitle was Bridging Time, Space, Miracles, and Belief. And as I was developing the material about the way that our experience of belief plays out in our lives and how it touches the physical world through this field of energy, this divine matrix that connects everything, that is now acknowledged by Western science as being literally a field of energy that underlies our existence. It's not a theory or a metaphor. It now is a fact that this field exists. And it is a fact that belief, as we define it here today, heart-based human belief, is a language that speaks to this field. So as I was developing material for the Divine Matrix and it came to this part of the book, it was so powerful. And the examples and the stories and the case histories and the science and the discoveries were so powerful that I was concerned that it would get lost as a sidebar within the book, The Divine Matrix. It was strong enough to stand on its own as its own book. So here we are a year later now with that piece being offered as its own body of information. It dovetails into everything we've ever done, and it also stands on its own as a very, very empowering body of information. What we now know, Western science in the last 2 to 3 years, this is how recent a lot of this material is, has documented the fact that belief is an experience that we have in our hearts. And this makes all the difference in the world. Because what we now know is that our hearts are the strongest generator of electrical fields in the human body. And our hearts are also the strongest generator of magnetic fields in the human body. So while our brains do generate relatively weak electrical and magnetic fields, we know the heart is about 100 times stronger than the brain electrically and about 5,000 times stronger than the brain magnetically. So when we have a feeling in our heart, what we are really doing is we are creating very precise patterns of electrical and magnetic fields inside of our bodies that extend beyond our physical bodies into the world around us. And the reason that this is so important, and I know our listeners probably already know what I'm about to share with them, is that we live in a world made of those fields. Our physical world is made of electrical and magnetic information. And our own physics texts will tell us that if you want to change the atoms of the physical world, you have to either change the electrical or the magnetic field, and then the atom will change. Well, our heart does both. Our heart produces both the strongest electrical and magnetic fields within our bodies. So, and the beauty is we don't have to know any of that. But when our logical left brain asks the question, how can my experience of belief possibly have any effect on the physical world beyond my body? This is the answer. We are bathed in a field of energy that connects everything, and our hearts speak the nonverbal language of that field. And to the degree that we choose to hone that language in our lives, to that degree are we empowered to influence the physical world around us, everything from the quality of the success of our careers, the quality of our relationships, the abundance, the spiritual material abundance in our lives, everything from the peace at the family dinner table to the peace between nations. All these things have been documented as being directly influenced by the quality of the belief that we hold in our hearts outside of our bodies. Inside of our bodies, other studies now are showing that that field in our heart is a signal that we send into our brains. And every moment of every day, this moment right now, everyone that's listening to this program, there's a conversation that's happening between our hearts and our brains. Our heart is sending a signal to our brain, and based on the quality of that signal, our brain is releasing chemistry into our bodies that either affirms or denies or is neutral regarding the life in our bodies. It's either sending very powerful, life-affirming hormones and immune enhancers or the opposite into our body right now. So when we come back from our break, we're going to talk about how we create these beliefs.
Absolutely. And the connection between the beliefs, the heart, and the thoughts, the mind, and bridging those gaps. And we'll talk more with Greg Braden, author of Spontaneous Healing of Belief on Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay tuned. Spontaneous Healing of Belief. I'm Richard Dugan. My special guest is Greg Braden, the author of Shattering the Paradigms of False Limits. Now, Greg, as we continue talking here, there is an interesting paradigm in and of itself where you've given us a wonderful description of the heart and its connection with belief and the importance. And that's what I gathered, is that the beliefs are important. But there are also those beliefs that limit us. I refer to them as perceived limitations on the physical level.
Sure.
But when we talk about these types of paradigms, these beliefs, we're talking about more of a heart-centered aspect. And you've given us a lot to think about in terms of the fact that there are beliefs that we do need, and that they work in concert with the mind, with the thought. And we've talked about that in terms of the divine matrix as well, and many other schools of thought, that before anything physical exists, it starts as a thought. But now you're throwing this new element in here of belief. How do those, I'm going to say those three elements, mm-hmm. belief, thought, and the physical world, how do they work together?
Great question, Richard. And I know I spoke quickly and a little forcefully before the break, because we wanted to cover a lot of material and lay that foundation so we can tie into it through the rest of our program mm-hmm. here today. And the question you've just asked, we've done precisely that. We've laid the foundation to answer this. Thoughts are important in our lives, and I'm not saying that they are not important. However, a thought in and of itself is relatively benign. It's a relatively weak experience in our lives, and now we know why, because the thought that occurs in our brain has a relatively weak electrical and magnetic component. And this is why thinking our way through our solutions may be more difficult than feeling our way into the outcome. And this is precisely where we're going with this. So a belief, let's just define thought, feeling, emotion, and belief. The thoughts occur in the upper energy centers of the human body, as defined in the ancient Sanskrit traditions, the upper three chakras, logic, communication. These are all associated from our neck up through the crown of our head. This is where we model and we simulate in our mind the possibilities of relationship and career and all the things that we'd like to experience in our lives. That thought, until it is imbued with the power that brings it to life, has very little power in our world. And a thought in and of itself, without the power of the emotion that fuels it, is what we call a wish or a hope. It is an open-ended experience. It is simply as a possibility. It's not right, wrong, good, or bad. It's a possibility. Until we give that thought life, and we do that through the lower energy centers of our bodies associated with creation and procreation, and this is where the emotions of love, for example, come from. So when we fuel the thought in our mind with the love that comes from our creative centers, what the science is showing, what the ancients have shown us, is that those two forces together, when we marry the power of a thought with the power of our love, for example, or sometimes it's subconsciously our fear that also comes from those lower centers. So when we marry our thought with the power of our love or our fear regarding that thought, those two energies come together in the heart center. You can actually see it. We can measure it electrically. It happens in our heart center, and now we have just defined a feeling. A feeling is the union of the thought and the emotion, and the feeling happens in our heart center, the one energy center we have not yet accounted for in this model, right in the center of our chest. And thought, feeling in our hearts and belief are very closely associated. Belief is a special kind of feeling. When we have a belief about the rightness or the wrongness of something in our lives, or what is so, or what is true, we generally have very strong feelings about that belief. And we can look at some of the most controversial topics in our society today: a cloning, abortion, stem cell research, assisted suicide, death penalty, right to die. All of those topics elicit very powerful feelings within us because we have strong beliefs as to their rightness or their wrongness. So now that we've defined this, thought happens in the upper centers, emotion in the lower centers. Our emotions of love and fear are what we fuel into the thoughts in our mind, creating feelings and beliefs that happen in our heart. Now our own science is telling us that those feelings and beliefs are actually the words that we use for very powerful blueprints of electrical and magnetic energy. And that blueprint that we create in our hearts is what extends beyond our body into the physical world and can elicit miracles of healing in someone standing right next to us, and we'll share some examples of that. Or that same signal also is interpreted by our brain when we have a feeling or a belief that we are already healed, for example. Let's just take the healing example one step further.
Yeah.
When we can feel and believe that we are already healed, that's not a make-believe experience. That is us creating the template for what we choose to experience in our lives. And this is a very subtle and a very powerful shift in the way that we feel and see ourselves in the world. And as a scientist, I've got to tell you, it's a very different way for the Western mind to think about things. We're conditioned to believe that we have to work our way toward the outcome. And sometimes, you know, if you're building a space shuttle, that's certainly what we do when we're building the world outside of our bodies, all the components that have to come together. But when we're working inside of our bodies, what the ancients have always said, and now what our own science has documented, is that if we can feel from the outcome as if it's already happened, then that feeling creates those electrical and magnetic fields. Our brain responds to those and says, oh, well, this person's already healed, so I better send the kind of chemistry into the body that a healed person would expect to have. And this is where we have the huge increase in the immune response. And as we said before the break, from 3 minutes of feeling the feelings of gratitude and appreciation, from only 3 minutes of that, the brain will increase its DHE output into the body over 100%. And that increase will last up to 6 hours. We're not eating differently. We're not doing anything differently in terms of lifestyle. We simply have had that feeling. And can you imagine if we can condition ourselves to feel more than 3 minutes, what that does in our lives? Now, scientists know this, but they don't believe what their own studies have shown them. And if there's any doubt about that, all we need to do is go in the open literature, look at the research on something called the placebo effect inside the human body, where people believe that they are given either a medication or have undergone a procedure that will heal their bodies, when in reality they experience neither. And in the belief that it's happened, their bodies will trigger the chemistry as if they've already been healed. Some of the examples, people who have undergone chemotherapy and know that it's often, not always, but often associated with nausea and hair loss, things like that. Control groups, half of them were given the chemotherapy, the other half were given saline solutions that shouldn't have any effect. And the people given saline, their bodies begin to lose their hair and go into the nausea, and the cancer goes into remission just as if they had the chemo. And the only thing that can account for that is their belief that they have experienced a healing experience. Now, many times doctors will say it's just a psychological response.
Yeah.
In the book, I document an amazing study in the year 2004, University of Turin Medical School in Turin, Italy, where they did this kind of procedure. They injected patients with a compound that should patients were in a lot of pain. They gave them a dopamine compound that relieved the pain, so they knew that when they got the injection, the pain would be relieved. The kicker is that the injection only lasted for 60 minutes, and then it wore off.
Mm-hmm.
When we come back from the break, I'm going to tell you what happened when they told them they were giving the solution, but they received saline. Probably be no surprise.
Absolutely. And we'll also talk a little bit more about this whole process and belief and the importance, and we'll also find out about Milarepa. Stay tuned. I'm Richard Dugan. Greg Braden's my guest, and you're listening to Tell Me Your Story. Stay with us. Milarepa. Ever heard the name before? Well, it might be new to you and news to you. We'll find out more about Greg's experience with this ancient as we talk more about the book he has recently released called Spontaneous Healing of Belief, Shattering the Paradigms of False Limits, which leads obviously to the belief, if you will, that, well, then there must be beliefs that are not false. They're true. And I don't want to say limits, but they're truly limitless. And we'll be talking about that here with Greg Braden as we continue on our program. And if you would like to hear this program again, you can go to richarddugan.com. That's richarddugan.com. Go to the shows, the radio shows page, page 2, although I am working on the process of reconfiguring it so that it's a little easier to find. But nonetheless, go down to the program with Greg Braden and click on the link, and you'll be able to hear this program again following the broadcast. We want you to stay tuned as we continue talking about these various things. And Greg, we were talking about all of this. Your example was spot on in terms of scientists, doctors, and research, and the placebo. And that right there tells you that it isn't what they're taking, but what they've already taken, if you will, into their hearts and minds, so to speak.
Well, it is, Richard, and I'm just going to finish this last example because this is the one that tells the story that has made the headlines all over the world from this study. It tells that it is not merely a psychological effect, because what happened just before the break, we were talking about people in a lot of pain giving dopamine compounds to relieve the pain, but the dopamine in their bodies had a residual of only 60 minutes, and after an hour it wore off. It was no longer present. They metabolized it out of their bodies. But the key is they know what it feels like. This is the reference. They know what it feels like when they do receive the compound. So in the study, again, half were given the actual compound, half were given a simple saline solution, but neither group knew which one had the actual compound, which one had the saline. The group that received the saline, their bodies experienced the relief of the pain as if the dopamine was actually in their bodies. So they did brain scans, and this is what makes it such a unique study. They scanned the individual neurons in the brain, and what they found, Richard, is that the brain cells had changed as if they were in the presence of the dopamine compound, even though there was none in their bodies. The only thing that had happened is that these people believed that they were having a repeat treatment, and because they knew what it felt like before, the expectation was that it was going to be like that again. And on a single neuron level, their cells changed to reflect the belief. And the studies say this is the first time that the power of the placebo has ever been documented at the single neuron level. It is not merely an emotional or a psychological response. While those might be part of it, it is a literal physical change in the body in response to a belief. And now our physicists document the same thing beyond our bodies, that the paths of electrons and quantum particles, the very stuff we're made of, they will change in response to someone watching them and having an expectation or a belief about what those particles should be doing. So we've got studies on both sides here, outside of our bodies, inside of our bodies, all linking back to the power of human feeling, human belief, expectation, and it's the very power that has been discounted in Western societies and relegated to to this nebulous experience that it has no power, where the ancient traditions and the texts and the practices that we've visited over the last 22 years have shown us that nothing could be further from the truth. So I wanted to go through those examples and just so we have a very clear understanding of what we're talking about when we use the word belief.
I remember hearing the story of scientists conducting experiments, and they would claim to conduct the same experiment over and over and over again, but different people in the room at the time. And every time even when they had the same people in the room, the results came out differently.
Absolutely.
And it's like, well, wait a minute, that's not possible. Well, guess what? It is very possible.
It is, and you know, the very prestigious scientific journal, Nature, documented this effect in the title. This is a bibliography of the new book, but the title, and it's also on the technical references on our website if people are interested in more of this kind of information. We have it all documented. But the title of the paper, the peer-reviewed paper that was published by Nature, to me tells us the whole story. It says the title of this paper was Quantum Theory Demonstrated, Observation Affects Reality. So they're actually saying that by observing, we're interacting, we're influencing the world around us. So the question is not as to whether or not this happens. The question is to what degree do we influence the reality of our bodies and our world? And now we're discovering the answer to that question is that we influence our bodies and our world to the degree that we allow ourselves to hone the language of belief.
You know, it's interesting that you raise that point because now it raises a whole different perspective on a specific subject that comes up quite often, especially nowadays, that is of global warming. Mm-hmm. So now I'm sitting here as you're sharing this thinking, well, now, are we influencing and impacting global warming because of everything that we're putting into the air from our cars and all of this electricity that we're using? Or are we doing this with our beliefs and our thoughts? It's almost as though I'm not saying this is something we want to happen.
Sure.
But because it's on all of our minds, we're making it happen.
What I would say is that we are probably influencing it to some degree, and it's probably a minimal degree in terms of the warming itself.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other side of that is that the studies have shown, and we said early in this program, that our heart is the strongest electrical, bioelectrical, and biomagnetic generator in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And that those magnetic fields from the human heart have a direct influence on the stuff our world is made of, including weather patterns, including high-pressure systems, including low-pressure systems. And this has been documented I live in the high deserts, northern New Mexico. In the native traditions here, they know this very well. They'll create what are called microclimate environments, where in the middle of a drought, you'll see a rain cloud appear over their cornfields, you know, every afternoon at 4 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, to the average person watching this, they'll say, well, isn't that an interesting coincidence?
So then we would then have to kind of take back our chagrins and our snickers and our criticisms of, say, a Pat Robertson back in the 80s who said that I'm going to pray that this storm doesn't hit the coast of Texas, this hurricane. I don't know if you recall that. I remember hearing that.
Yeah.
And that was what they did, and supposedly it turned.
Well, it did, and the key to those kinds of prayers, now since we've touched on it, people are going to listen to this and document it, I want to be very clear. It's not about the prayers are best and most effective. Oh, first of all, I'm going to back up. In the ancient traditions, when we feel in our hearts as if something has already happened, that is what they call a prayer. And it's actually been documented as a lost modality of prayer that was part of the Judeo-Christian traditions until the edits of the 4th century that we've talked about in other programs here and also in all of our books. So the idea of feeling from the outcome actually was part of the early Christian traditions until it was lost 1,700 years ago. And in that way, our traditions are not so different from many of the indigenous traditions throughout the world. The key, and this is what I want to say about the Pat Robertson piece, the key is rather than praying to the negative so that the storm doesn't hit the coast, is to affirm the positive that the coast is safe from the storm.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that might seem like splitting hairs to our listeners, but what the ancients have said, when we spend our time with the monks and the nuns and the abbots in 22 monasteries, 12 nunneries in Tibet, and in the monasteries of Egypt and Bolivia and Peru, they all say the same thing, that this field of energy apparently responds to our nonverbal language is very literal. And it's these positive affirmations that the coastline is safe is where these prayers are really powerful, or that we're already healed is where it's really powerful and really effective.
This whole conversation is very powerful. It's giving me some new ideas as far as where my thoughts have been as opposed to my feelings and beliefs. Mm-hmm. And we're going to continue talking about that with Greg Braden, the author of Spontaneous Healing of Belief, Shattering the Paradigms of False Limits. Stay with us. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. Tell Me Your Story is the name of the program. I'm Richard Dugan. Greg Braden is my guest, and we are talking about spontaneous healing of belief. I wanted to get into another area, if we might, Greg, talking about an experience that you had on one of your sojourns in China and Tibet, and specifically, and I made reference to this before one of the earlier breaks, about an ancient by the name of Milarepa. I had it the first time.
You're the closest I've ever heard. Most Westerners will simply call him Milarepa, is the way they'll pronounce it. And he was a great yogi almost 1,000 years ago, who is a legend in the traditions of the Tibetan Buddhists and throughout India and Nepal and the Tibetan Plateau. I'm going to take just a moment to share his story because it's very similar to the story of Buddha in some respects. Milarepa was born into a privileged family. He was trained early in life to develop his psychic abilities, and he had the leisure time to do that. And according to text, he became very adept at using his yogic and his psychic powers. He was trained as a yogi. Through something that isn't really clear, I've seen different versions of different translations of how it happened, but for one reason or another, there was an argument with another village. The warriors from that village came and killed his entire family. And he was devastated, and he was angry. And in his anger, he misused his yogic powers and killed 35 people from that village before he stopped. And the elders who had trained him took him under their wing, and they helped him to understand how that was such a blatant misuse of this this inner power, these inner abilities, the yogic and the psychic abilities. And once he understood what he had done and that it was such a powerful misuse, he pledged that for the rest of his life, he lived to 84 years old, for the rest of his life he would dedicate himself to perfecting his body in even greater ways than he had already learned, and that he would never hurt another person again, that it would be for peaceful purposes. So he left everything, just as Buddha did. He left a privileged lifestyle, all of his material possessions. He secluded himself in a number of caves with nothing other than the food that that he originally took with him and the clothes on his back. And he was there for the rest of his life, mastering these inner abilities. The stories tell that when passerbys would stumble upon him, he was a frightening sight because his hair had grown down to his knees, his fingernails were long, his skin had turned green from the chlorophyll overdose of the nettles that was the sole source of his diet, and that his clothing had turned into just tattered shreds. He looked like a living green ghost, according to the texts. But the reason we're sharing the story here is that every once in a while he would take a student under his wing, and one of his students who stayed with him for quite a while, in an effort to help the student break the paradigm of false limits, that helped the student shatter the belief that he was a prisoner in this world, Milarepa walked over to a cave wall that they were living and studying in, and he placed his open palm up against the rock, the native rock, the living rock of this cave wall, and with his eyes closed in a deep breath, he continued to push his hand into that rock as if the rock did not exist. And he pushed it in just, well, the reason I'm sharing this story is I heard this story from a Sikh mystic who was my yoga teacher back in the 1980s. And when I found myself in Tibet, I said, I want to go to this place. I want to see this cave. And it took 16 days to get into the elevations. We were just under 8,000 feet 18,000 feet above sea level. We had to acclimate to those elevations. We found ourselves at Milarepa's cave, and I walked over to the place where he had stood 800 years earlier, and we found this place in the cave wall, and I actually put my hand into the impression that he had left deep in that rock, and there was no doubt in my mind that it wasn't hoaxed. My hand fit perfectly cradled into the impression that he had left in there. And there were other places throughout the cave where he had done similar things. And the question that came into my mind was, I want to know what this man was thinking. What was he feeling when he had this experience? And our translator, our Tibetan translator, was with me, and he answered my questions almost before I asked. And he said his teachers had taught him that Milarepa was feeling that he and that rock were not separate, that they were one. And as one, the cave was no longer a bound or a confining limit in his life. He could move freely within the bounds of those caves. And he did this feat to demonstrate that to himself and his student. And once his student saw this possibility, this miracle in his mind showed him that something else was possible, and he had to reconcile it in his beliefs, and it helped him. He knew at least one person had shown him that we are not necessarily limited by our physical reality. And this is the way the ancients used to help people to break the limits of the beliefs that held them in a limiting capacity, whether it's their ability to heal or their ability to move freely in life or, you know, whatever it is. So the ancients used miracles. Today, we use science to do the same thing. We show through science why things are the way they are, and when we're led to those understandings, we connect the dots, and we have to change our belief systems to reflect what the science has shown us. But I've also learned, Richard, that not everyone learns the same. Some people aren't very left-brained. They don't respond to science.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in the book, we've tried to do both. I will share a story of a miracle, and then I'll share the science that helps us to understand how that miracle could be possible. And this is what we try to do in our live events, to honor the different ways that we all seem to learn in our world. But Milarepa's story is one of the most powerful, and it's very a very tangible story.
I find it interesting that the West, the United, our modern society, if you will, requires the proof that the ancients just did. It was just a matter of, it was life. It was they didn't need an explanation. It just worked.
Well, we've been conditioned to believe that we are separate from the world around us, that we must defend ourselves against the very elements of nature that we're made of, and that that somehow we are separate from everything and one another, even ourselves, and ultimately our source. And in that separation, we feel as powerless victims, and that, maybe not necessarily consciously, I'm not saying people walk around saying this, you know, at a Starbucks, but it's sort of an unspoken conditioning that runs deep in the fabric of our society. So when we find ourselves faced with a life-threatening condition, or we find ourselves faced with a condition that we feel is leading our country down a road where we don't want to go, as different as those feel from one another, they're part of the same experience, because the truth is there is no them and us, there is a we.
Yeah.
And as we accept our role as part of all that is, and we learn the language that the stuff of the universe is made of, when we learn to feel as if the peace has already happened in our hearts, the studies show that broad geographic areas will become peaceful, terrorist activities will stop, wars will stop.
Mm-hmm.
For seemingly, mysterious reasons, but we know that these effects are out there. But the key is that we are led to believe that we are powerless victims, and we can be, we may be, until we choose to embrace what the ancients showed us and what our own science now is telling us. And the conditions of our world, I believe, are now pushing us to the place where we must embrace these truths and think of ourselves differently to survive what we've created.
And that's what we're trying to do, is get people to think differently. Before we go to our break, I want to let our listeners know that you can go to gregbraden.com and you can get more information not only about spontaneous healing of beliefs, but his other works and upcoming events that will be taking place. GregBraden.com, GregBraden.com. You can also go to my website, RichardDugan.com. We have links to his website as well, and you'll be able to listen to this interview again. And when we come back, I have two questions that I want you to answer before we wrap up, and we'll only have about 5-6 minutes to do so, which is unfortunate, but we ask you to stay with us. I'm Richard Dugan with Greg Braden. His latest work is Spontaneous Healing of Belief, Shattering the Paradigms of False Limits. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story. Stay tuned. This is Tell Me Your Story. My guest is Greg Braden, author of Spontaneous Healing of Belief. And the last couple of questions I have for you, Greg, regarding this book, and I'm not sure that I asked you on each of the subsequent books when we had you on the program, but what is it that you want to accomplish with this book? What do you hope to see as an outgrowth of this work? And then when you, and I'll give you about 2-3 minutes to answer that question.
All right. Oh, so that's the first question?
That's the first question.
Well, it's essentially what we've already shared here today. The context is everything, and the context within which this entire discussion is happening is that some of the greatest minds of our time right now are telling us that we are the generation and we're living a time unlike any other time in recorded human history where we are faced with the greatest number of multiple threats, everything from the very real possibility of war, global war, nuclear war, new diseases that are cropping up that we have no medical cures for, the depletion of resources, the way we're using energy. We simply cannot continue another century doing the things we've done in the past. They're telling us we've got somewhere between 8 and 15 years to figure this out. And at the same time, those same experts are telling us that we've got to think of ourselves and our world differently to arrive at the new understandings that will help us not just survive, but to thrive, to transcend this time, this great challenge of history, to become and work in our lives very, very differently than we have in the last 300 or 500 years since the birth of science. So I cannot help but believe that the rethinking of our relationship to the world and ourselves and ultimately the universe beyond is going to be a key element in redefining who we are, and it will become a pivotal keystone in us to creating the solutions that will allow us to meet the challenges of our time. So that my prayer is that this book becomes a powerful catalyst in that conversation to help us redefine who we are and our role in the universe.
And I hope folks will continue this conversation that we've begun here on Tell Me Your Story. And my final question for the program as we come close to the end, and I looks like I've left you about 2 to 3 minutes to answer the question, are you where you want to be right now?
Oh, that's an easy question. I'll say yes, sort of.
Okay, let's have an explanation.
I've got 2 or 3 minutes.
Yes.
I'll share a quick story. I was a defense engineer working for Martin Marietta Aerospace during the last years of the Cold War on the nuclear missile program when I took some time and traveled into the mountains of the Egyptian Sinai Peninsula. And it was at sunset on top of Mount Sinai one afternoon in 1986. When it was just so beautiful, I was drawn to ask myself a question. I could have asked it in my living room, but for some reason I waited until I got to Egypt to ask. Mm-hmm. And the question was simply this: if I were to leave this world in that moment, if for some reason something happened and I could never come back to this world, and I looked on everything I'd done, would I feel complete with my life? And before I even got the question out, the answer screamed no in my head, that I wouldn't feel complete. And my next question was, well, what would it take to be able to say yes to that question? What would it take to feel that I've done what I've come to this world to do? And what I'm doing now in these books have brought me closer to being able to say yes to that question. I'm still feeling less than complete with it, and I'm happy with what we've accomplished up until this point.
Well, we are certainly happy to be a part of the process of accomplishing that task in helping people to see and hear about new ideas, new beliefs, new paradigms for a new world. And, of course, it's the world that you choose, those of you that are listening. it's entirely up to you. It's up to me. It's up to Greg. It's up to my wife. It's up to all of us to decide and begin to think about and believe that we deserve, not just that we can have it, but that we deserve the kind of world that we really do want. And Greg, we thank you for the work that you've been doing for so many years, and we look forward to having you back on the program, maybe not in a year when your next book comes out, but maybe in about 6 months to do a follow-up, see how your sojourns have been and where you've been and what you've been up to, and how the work of spontaneous healing of belief has impacted the world that you have come in contact with and that you come back to.
Thank you so much, Richard. I'm going to say yes. I'll meet you back here in 6 months.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Greg, I thank you very much for joining us. And again, gregbraden.com is his website. The latest work is Spontaneous Healing of Belief, Shattering the Paradigms of False Limits. And we encourage you to pick up a copy and look it over. Go to the website and gather more information. You can email Greg, and he will be certainly looking forward to an opportunity to converse with you in that regard. And we look forward to conversing with him again in about 6 months here on Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan. Certainly pick up a copy of the book and go to the website, richarddugan.com. You can hear this interview again. Give me an email. I'd love to hear from you as well, richard@richarddugan.com. As always, we look forward to talking with you again next Saturday at the same time. Love to Lal. Have a great day.
Talk with me, tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Just take the rest of the weekend off, I think is what you ought to do.
I have a quick question for you before you go.
Yeah. I have another interview at the top of the hour, and I'll speak quickly.
This is very, very quick. Do you think in this journey that you have with this book, do you think it's possible for us to become immortal?
Oh, absolutely. And
really?
Immortal in the sense, depends on how we define immortality,
right.
What we just talked, actually I did a program this morning, Dr. Susan on Call in Atlanta, a medical doctor, and we had this conversation, and what I'll say is right now, in the last 2 years, the scientific journals have come out, and what they've said is that there's absolutely no reason for our bodies to stop functioning after only 70 to 100 years, that every organ in our bodies now is documented as having the ability to reproduce its own cells, even the organs we were told could not do that, including spinal tissue, neural tissue, heart tissue, and brain tissue. Every human is born with stem cells, and they stay with us through the end of our lives, waiting for the instructions that allow them to do what they came into our bodies and our world to do. And even the DNA, that we've told the ends of the DNA, the portions called telomeres, that have been observed to become brittle and break with aging, while that may happen sometimes, they've discovered that we all possess the enzymes that will heal and repair those telomeres. All of this is dependent upon the environment and the condition that allows our bodies to do what they do. And that environment and that conditioning is directly linked to the human heart and what we would call feeling and belief, the quality of the feeling and belief, and whether or not we're sending our brain life-affirming or life-denying signals. We documented, I just did a program, I was with 6,000 people in Monterrey, Mexico, in a sports arena. And we had a series of images. We documented a nun in Tibet who was, right now, in 2005, she was 120 years old. And just last month in Israel, there was a woman crossing one of the checkpoints to come into the West Bank. Her papers expired, and they took her to get new papers. She was born in 1888.
Wow.
And so in 2008, she's 120. And the thing is, these women, you'd never know it. Their color's good. Their skin is supple. They look good. They look healthy. They're not hanging on by a thread. And the key for both of them was they love their families tremendously. The Israeli woman drinks a cup of olive oil every day, so I guess that helps.
Wow.
But the point is, and that people are documented as living much, much longer and very healthy, vital lives. It's not this, you know, I mean, her hair wasn't even all silver. I mean, she had some gray in it, but she had color left in her hair. It's not aging the way we've been conditioned to believe in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So when we look, and I address this a little bit in the book, what the studies show is that the reason that we die after 70 to 100 years is attributed to what doctors call heart disease. That's the single largest killer of adults in the Western world. Mm-hmm. Heart disease is defined as hardening of the arteries, plaque buildup, vascular disease, and things like that. Those are the specifics. And this is going to be really interesting to you. They all fall under a broad umbrella that is now defined as hurt. So the question is, do we go through life experiencing what many people call the suffering and the disappointment and the loss of the things that are so familiar to us, the loss of places that have been familiar and homes and jobs and friends and family and pets? Is it the cumulative effect of unresolved hurt that actually takes our lives? And what the studies, and this is what I showed in the book, it appears that the reason we live typically in the past, that we've lived only to a 70 or 100 years, is that that is how long the human heart can hold up under the stress of unresolved hurt before it simply stops working.
Wow.
And the flip side of that is as we learn to heal, to go through life knowing that we're going to have those experiences. And yes, we're going to lose things that we hold dear. But if we can redefine that loss, appreciate the time we have together, and know that there's a part of us that continues, that it's really not, you know, the end, as we can find a way to redefine those things in our lives, which apparently these ladies have done, the nun in Tibet and the woman in Israel,
mm-hmm.
then it appears that there's really nothing that that will shut our bodies down.
Hmm.
But now you're going to laugh at this next part, and this next interview is a pre-record. If I'm a few minutes late, that's fine too. So it is. I know the person very well. The ancient Essenes, believed to be the authors of the Dead Sea Scrolls, they address this in their texts. And they say something that sounds funny until we really think about it. They say that the first 100 years of life are the hardest, and that most people simply don't survive that learning.
Mm-hmm.
But they say if we can get through those first 100 years, it's that first round of loss, of losing our biological parents, of losing friends and siblings. And if we can find a way to heal the hurt that comes from those things, that after that, I mean, we're home free.
Mm-hmm.
And my sense, and we talk about this in the workshop, I think that there's truth to that, but my sense is that the hurt may run even deeper. And because I believe this is a Sanskrit name that you shared with me, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, because that, so I'm assuming that you've studied in some of those traditions.
Yes.
So the concept of family is very important, and that's why I'm going to share this next piece. I think that all the things the doctors are saying is true, but my sense is that we are probably all living an unspoken hurt that runs so deep and so subconsciously, and it's the hurt of being souls that are used to being with other souls in family, and the hurt that comes from the separation of that, moving into an individual physical body, and the loneliness and the separation that comes through that, that we go through life trying to fill by creating families with other people and recreating partnership with another human. That may be perhaps the deepest hurt that we're all learning to heal and resolve, and that may be the hurt that steals from us the very thing that we cherish the most, and that's life itself.
Greg, you psychic you.
Why would you say that?
Hey, you touched on a nerve right there.
Yes.
For me, especially.
Is it a bad nerve?
No,
it's a good
just
one.
It's an aha. It's like,
well,
wow.
It felt like it was important to follow that through to completion. It's a very powerful part of some of the workshops that we offer.
That's awesome.
I wanted to share that with you. So thank you for asking, and thank you for your trust.
Yeah,
and before you go,
time.
I don't have another question, but I just offer this. When, not if, but when you are on the Central Coast the next time, we would like to have you up to our place for an evening dinner.
You know, I would be, I'll tell you, first of all, it is rare for me to do that, and I would be absolutely honored. I don't have my schedule in front of me. I haven't looked much beyond this month, to be honest. I know I'm in Japan at the end of the month. But I'll look and I'll keep that in mind, and if
please.
You see that I'm going to be somewhere, and I forget, if you want to call the office, and we don't have to have a new book.
No.
Do an interview.
Not at all.
We typically do interviews. We typically set 1 week out of every month so I can be in one time zone at one landline, and we'll have that week of interviews. The exception is when I'm writing books, which I'm doing right now. Mm-hmm. So we'll probably skip next month. But,
right.
Feel free to call my office directly, or you can call Karina at Hay House, and she'll schedule whenever we have the next one. And I told him, when I look at the schedule and see Richard Dugan on there, I get a big smile because I really enjoy our programs.
Oh, thank you so much. I feel the same way.
Well, I'm going to say God bless both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your trust and the beautiful work you do together as a couple. I know you're both involved in this. And
and safe journey to you.
Hey, thank you very much. Look forward to the next time. And be sure and send us the link so we can let our web people know.
I will contact your main office on Monday.
All right. Okay. Take good care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.